What's in a name? If that name is Ace Firearms, you've just entered a very expensive business. First, a fully appointed gun shop with all the guns, ammo, and accessories you could possibly imagine. But then you enter the manufacturing facility that is home to Red Alligator Concealment, Militia Arms Customs, and so much more. Ace Firearms is beyond a simple gun shop. This is a totally peerless operation. To find out more, go to acefirearms.com. Ace Firearms. This is only the beginning.
Are you prepared to bug out? Infidel Body Armor and an Army Ranger have produced a high-speed DVD and book to show you how to drive in combat, patrol, and how to survive in combat. Skills you'll need when it hits the fan. Go to DrivenDVD.com. DrivenDVD.com.
Rampant hacking, identity theft, mass surveillance. Defending yourself today is not an option. It's a requirement. Introducing the Conceal Shield Travel Pack from DefenderShield.com. Conceal Shield is cutting-edge wireless blocking technology that eliminates all signals, including EMF, GPS, and RFID. Place cell phones, credit cards, IDs, and other trackable items into the Conceal Shield, and they become totally invisible. Get Conceal Shield now at DefenderShield.com. Use promo code CONCEAL for 10% off. Guard your privacy, secure your data, and protect your health with Conceal Shield.
You've made a serious investment in protecting yourself and your family. You've purchased the gun, the ammunition, the training, and even secured a license to carry in your state. You know the Constitution and don't believe you should have to pay for a right that you already have, as written in the Second Amendment. But you are law-abiding. Now you are considering the legal defense options you should have if you ever have to use a firearm. Self-Defense Fund is a comprehensive litigation membership backing you on appeals, legal expenses, court costs, and more. Up to $1 million per incident and unlimited attorney costs per member. Discover selfdefensefund.com for yourself. Any weapon, any state, any time.
Now's your chance to get the last of the Resolution Radio Blood Tees. Only a few left available before we try to do a reorder. This has been a high-selling item, and we really appreciate everyone's support in getting this shirt and showing their pride as well as showing their heritage. Nothing counts more than blood. Get yours today from Resolution Radio. Only $25 plus $5 shipping and handling. It really helps the network improve, and you really get a great product to showcase what you truly believe in. Nothing counts more than blood. Only from Resolution Radio at ResolutionRDO.com. Send check, money order, or well-concealed cash to Sonny Thomas at P.O. Box 27, Springboro, Ohio, 45066. That's Sonny Thomas at P.O. Box 27, Springboro, Ohio, 45066.
At Spikes Tactical, we are all shooters with a very simple mission. Make the best product we can perfect at the best possible price for our consumers. We strive to produce the best components and rifles available, with quality control second to none, because real-world events don't allow for a second chance. Whether you are an operator, competitor, or home defender, Spikes Tactical will serve you well. Go to SpikesTactical.com. Spikes Tactical, 100% American-made to the highest standard.
When I was a kid, I wanted to be just like Cal Ripken. It's definitely humbling to know that now people are calling me a hero. Instead of finding the IED with my metal detector, the IED found me first, and that resulted in double above-knee amputations. It's hard to describe the feeling of meeting somebody that you've always wanted to be like. There are people now that are looking up to you for their inspiration and to be their role model.
Visit saluteheroes.org to learn more.
At Chambers Custom, we have one job. We strive to build the most obsessively reliable, accurate, and beautiful pistols for the discriminating gun owner. Fusing the ageless 1911 design with a 21st century approach to each part and component, Chambers Custom meticulously begins each pistol as a standalone project, creating a bespoke, handcrafted, peerless firearm. They integrate all of the internal, external, and intrinsic elements that make a custom 1911 unique. Go to ChambersCustom.com. Chambers Custom, truly the mechanical advantage.
You're listening to Resolution Radio. ResolutionRDO.com.
Welcome to Season 7, Episode 18 of the Fireman Trainer Podcast. Way through the year already. Time is flying. In this episode, we'll be talking with John Petrolino about how New Jersey's permit system is discriminating against certain firearm owners. If you like our podcast, give us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast app and share it with a friend. This episode definitely would be one of those that you'll want to share, because if it doesn't get you a little bit bothered that the government's discriminating against people, after listening to this, I'm not sure what will get you upset. But buckle up for another riveting episode of the Firearm Trainers Podcast. Remember, this episode is also brought to you by our friends at the FTA, the Firearms Trainers Association. Visit their website at ftaprotect.com to learn more about their instructor coverage they offer and their competitive pricing. All certified instructors can apply for FTA coverage. And remember, listeners to this podcast can get 10% off from your policy by entering promo code FTP10 at checkout. This episode is brought to you by the concealedcarry.com business directory. Did you know that you can get a free listing for your instruction business on concealedcarry.com? Visit biz.concealedcarry.com and add your business for free. It will be searchable online and to potential students who use the concealedcarry.com mobile app. Claim your listing today. We bring this podcast to support the industry, the Second Amendment, and most importantly, every firearm instructor in America dedicates time and energy into making gun owners more knowledgeable. Today, we're joined by John Petrolino from Bearing Arms and Penn Patriot. Welcome, John. Thanks for coming on the podcast again.
Hi, Rob. Thank you for having me. I feel like it's been a very long time.
It has been a very long time, and my apologies for not having you on sooner, but I think today's topic kind of makes up for all that stuff, because if people aren't just a little bit frustrated with our government after hearing our today's topic, I don't know what will get your dander in an uproar, to say the least, because this kind of stuff shouldn't be going on in the 21st century. Let's put it simply. But hey, John, before we jump into our topic of the day, why don't you give our listeners a little bit of your background, in case they missed the other episode that you've been on. This is not your second time. You've been on several times before, just not recently in the last year.
Yeah. Hi. So I'm John Petrolino. I'm a freelance writer, and I cover Second Amendment issues. The writing thing and the Second Amendment advocacy and activism is kind of my side hustle. For my main occupation, I'm actually a merchant marine. And I started putting pen to paper on Second Amendment issues back in 2015, and started adding, you know, articles, you know, to my byline. And AmmoLand was so gracious to pick me up way back then, and I still write for them as well. And from like 2015 to 2020, I stayed the course, and I'd put out a couple of articles here and there, you know, whenever I had something to report on. Nothing too crazy. 2020 rolled around. I released a book called Decoding Firearms, and that's the subtitle to that is an easy to read guide on general gun safety and use. And it's a 101 level you know, guidebook for people to get into that are new to firearms or want to brush up on firearms, or perhaps want to convey information to others on firearms. So it's a, you know, it's 266 pages, and it's pretty, I'm not going to say it's authoritative, but it's got a lot of information.
Very, very good book. You know, we had you on talking about that before, and a lot of people that have purchased it, because it covers all the modern firearms, which not everybody might own, and it gives them a little bit of background on what they are, so we understand what an AR is and what a semi-automatic is and those types of things.
Absolutely. So, thank you. And 2020 is when things like really exploded. So when I was previously writing from 2015 to 2020, you know, I was just writing for credit. You know, I wasn't getting paid or anything like that. But 2020, you know, AmmoLand approached me and asked me to do some work for them. And they said, okay, they brought me on. And you know, now I'd be, you know, drawing a check from them when, you know, I give them work. And I'd say that was 2020. And then by the winter of 2021 early, so it was probably by March of 2021, Bearing Arms had done the same, and Cam Edwards had asked me to come on over and, you know, start, you know, doing work there more officially instead of just for a byline, because I had started submitting work to him. And here we are several years later, and now I write primarily I put a lot of my work out on Bearing Arms and still at Ammo Land, but I also will, you know, write for The Truth About Guns as well as Shooting News Weekly. Those are the sites that I freelance for. And then I'll also do some work for news2a.com. That's a website that everybody should check out. They're up and coming. They're just about over a year old now. News2a.com. And they do, I wanted to say, a heavy focus on New Jersey, but they cover all issues across the country. And then I'll send some work over to The Armed Lifestyle as well when I have time. So that's kind of who I am and what I've been up to. And, you know, we're sitting here probably in the neighborhood of maybe 800 articles now under my belt since I've been serious about writing.
So you've grown out of the amateur phase. Now you're into the professional phase. So that's great.
Yeah, I guess so. And it's interesting because a lot of the stories here, they're all crisscross and they coincide. And, you know, as you know, training is where, you know, I was really focused many, many years ago. And then, you know, that's the direction that I thought my writing was going. Now I got sucked right into this litigation, legislation stuff, you know, on an advocacy end. And I did actually manage to, I joined the National and the New Jersey Society of Professional Journalists, which, you know, all you got to do to join is send them a check, right? No big deal. But what I was able to do was get credentialed in New Jersey. So I have my New Jersey press credentials, which is actually very important because you can't sit in on like any of the governor's, you know, press events and anything official. They want to see you have press credentials. And I had to maybe claw a little bit to get those, but I was able to get them. And, you know, it was a matter of finding work that wasn't biased, you know, to put out there to show the society that I, you know, I am in fact a journalist. It's not all just opinion and fire and brimstone, you know. And that's what brings us to today, actually, is, you know, work that is hard news, and it's journalism. I don't know if you wanted to segue into that or not, Rob.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. We'll go and we'll segue right into it, because I think if our listeners, longtime listeners, remember, we had a story about 18 months ago on the constitutional carry here in Ohio and who it really benefited, to try to go along, combat, and let people know that constitutional carry isn't as scary as the news media likes to make it out to be, or maybe more importantly, the politicians like it out. It actually serves the lower income population, because they're the ones that are highest risk, and at the same time, the ones that have the least amount of money bill to go along, get training, or go along and practice, go along and do things like that. They've got a lot of other worries to have. And I was glad to be able to bring that story to everybody, because I think it's important to realize that not everybody has a lot of disposable income. And we've got to be, as far as firearms go, you know, the 2A, Second Amendment is for everybody. And, you know, whether you're low income, high income, middle income, we should all be able to do it. And that's one of the things that I wanted to rally against the political winds that try to go along and make it difficult for people to practice their rights for it. So with that segue, John, why don't you tell us what's going on in New Jersey that's got my dander up on this story?
Well, it's going to be a cliffhanger, because we have to turn back the clock to 2 years ago and a couple of days when we had the New York State Rifle Pistol Association versus Bruin decision. And I think you've had guests on to talk about this specifically in New Jersey. I think you had Tony on to talk about training and carry, Tony Simon. And up until that point, there was no carry in New Jersey. So the ability to get a permit in the Garden State is just a little bit under 2 years old, I'll say, because by the time that everything got settled, I'd say maybe the first few permits were probably getting issued in August of 2022. So this is all new.
Mm-hmm.
New Jersey, much like New York, California tried. Massachusetts is doing it. California, I think, is actively doing it as well. And a bunch of other areas, Maryland, all came forward with these Bruin response laws. So now the lawmakers were trying to figure out ways to circumvent the current laws to make it even more difficult on carriers, right? So everybody's familiar with that. So that was going on. New Jersey had a hissy fit. And in the wake of all of these hissy fits, you had, the New Jersey State Police head saying, they expected 200,000 permits like in the first, couple months or whatever. And he was on the record saying that, he reached out to all the jurisdictions saying to be, vigilant for extra gun violence because now there's going to be civilian carriers. And of course, what do we find out? We fast forward to this year. And a couple of weeks before this March 14th date that I'm going to give you here, the Governor Phil Murphy, which everybody keep your eyes open. This guy's going to try to become president one day. You don't want him. Governor Murphy was lauding how so-called gun violence, I'm doing air quotes here, was lowest that it's been in a really long time, not just years, like almost like decades. The rate of gun violence has plummeted. And, he was talking about all these efforts. Well, what do we know? In the years that he was showing the drop in gun violence, which would have been primarily was 2023, but a little bit in 2022, what correlates with that was the civilian carriers. So there's some irony there. And we know the truth behind all of that. Part of all of the Bruin response initiatives was the attorney general put together something that's called a permit to carry dashboard. So on March 14th, 2024, so this is going back a few months now, is when they put out this dashboard. And the dashboard had all of this data. And I don't know what they were thinking. I don't know why they put this dashboard out, because all it's done is serve journalists and citizen journalists in really beneficial ways, because the information is that we're pulling out of there is very embarrassing for the state. And so the first thing that is important to understand about the Jersey law is we still have a subjective standard on the books for you to get a permit to carry or a pistol purchaser's permit or a firearms ID card. And this clause in the law says that the issuing authority could hold issuance to any person where the issuance would not be in the interest of the public health, safety, or welfare because the person is found to be lacking the essential character of temperament necessary to be entrusted with a firearm. And that's 2C58-3C5.
That's pretty vague, I would say.
Right. And I had somebody actually ask me, well, what does that mean? I'm like, well, exactly. And it's incredibly vague. So this is not an objective definable standard, right? So if we look at the Bruin decision, it's very explicit. It says that these permitting schemes, if they are presumed to be constitutional, they can only contain narrow, objective, and definite standards, for the license officials. So what is the narrow standard there? Well, there is no narrow standard with this public health, safety, welfare standard. So the first bit of data that I uncovered was that the majority, so more than half of the denials in the state, which at the time when I first started looking into all this, there was like maybe 33,000 permits. I think now we're up to like 35. But the data that was available back then in March was, you know, 33,000. There was like a little over 200 and change denials, which isn't that bad. But, you know, who's going to apply for a permit that isn't going to be, you know, qualified to get one? You were supposed to already have a firearms ID card. So if you have a firearms ID card, in theory, you should be good to go to get your permit to carry, because the requirements are exactly the requirements are exactly the same, with the exception of getting like the training and, you know, some of the extra permit to carry stuff, right? But statutorily, there's nothing really too crazy there. So we were finding that more than 50% of the denials were under this public health safety welfare standard. What I did not find in that dashboard, though, was I couldn't find the breakdown on the races, and a lot of other people couldn't find it either. So we were kind of scratching our heads here. So I put out what's called an Open Public Records Act request, which is basically a Freedom of Information Act request for New Jersey. And I addressed it to the Attorney General's office, Matthew Plotkin. And then they returned to me. It's kind of funny. They returned to me instructions on how to access the data that I was looking for. And I'm going to be honest with you. You know, I was in the dashboard. I find it hard to believe that I wasn't able to navigate it. I was in and out of the whole thing. So I'm not saying they added the data, but it looks like they added the data after my request. And I was able to look into the denials based, you know, based on race, which I think is a very important thing, because in New Jersey, if you're looking at the application rates, and we're just going to look at, you know, black and white, not everyone else, because there's some outliers with the Latino population that I found kind of interesting. I got to look into that more. But with the black and whites, if you look at the rates of who's been applying, so the black population might be underrepresented in New Jersey. So meaning that there's like an 11.6% of all of the applications for permits were black applicants, right? Whereas the New Jersey's black population is 13.1%, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they're underrepresented, but not by a lot. So this isn't telling you the story that the African American people don't want anything to do with firearms. That's actually, in my opinion, remarkable, and it's a statistical anomaly to the more anti-gun side, because that information probably scares the heck out of them, because it's not the narrative that they preach or they've been preaching for years, right? So right off the top, you know, you're getting this information here. But what do I find when I start looking through the denials? You've got more than double the black population, or the black applicants are being denied more than at a rate more than double than whites. So like, that's crazy, right? It's like 200 and some odd percent. Let me see here. It says they're denied. I think it was actually 2.5 times is what I had found. Right. Okay. So then you have people say, well, if you look at the African-American community, there's more incarcerations, there's more criminal history. And I'm like, okay, fine. You know, and we could talk about that on another day, in another place, in another time, about why that might be and what the problems are there, right? And that's also not going to look good for our government either, in my opinion. But if you go and you look at just the denials that were this subjective standard, right, the 2C58-3C5, I found the blacks to be denied 2.3 times more than whites. So this is, again, a police chief or, you know, issuing authority that's basically not giving somebody a permit. It could be because they don't like them, or whatever their reason is. They're saying it's a public health and safety risk. And what I want the listeners to understand is there's been plenty of people that have currently or had or have firearms identification cards, which allows you to purchase long guns in the state of New Jersey, and people who had formerly gotten pistol purchaser permits, because you need a pistol purchaser permit for every handgun that you purchase, right? So these are people that are gun owners that are trying to get their permits to carry, that have valid firearms paperwork, and now they're getting turned away under this subjective standard for a permit to carry. So it's like a lot of the same, you know, it's just these authorities trying to play the same games that were being played pre-Bruin, but now they're saying, you know, it's a public health, safety, welfare thing.
Well, and the thing that gets me, it's subjective. They're not pointing to somebody's conviction, saying that, you know, you're a felon, you can't be in possession. You know, we can't give you one because you're, you know, you've got domestic violence. Any of the ones that normally preclude firearm purchasing, which, of course, with the FOID card, they, you know, that would preclude them for that, too. But they've got firearms. They want to legally carry them, and they're still being turned down. And the one thing, as you're describing this, that really just boggles my mind is anybody who's been watching the firearm industry, the training industry, you know, instructors out there, I'm sure are going to agree with this. The two groups that we're seeing more of, more interest in, are minorities and women, females. So female minorities, even more. And that's where, you know, part of the reason for that is they realize their constitutional rights for it and the need for them to be able to take their own security in their own hands. And what you're describing to me is a bureaucracy that is, you know, putting people at jeopardy because they want to have these arbitrary, you know, we just don't like you, versus pointing to something that's concrete, like you've been convicted of a felony for doing that. And that's very troubling in my mind.
Well, and that's the thing in New Jersey, it's a felony if you do get caught with unlawful possession of any firearm. So, and people who are listening can correct me if I'm wrong, and you do too, Rob. But like, if you take a state like California, and I know at least in the past, I don't know if it's still true today, but if you got caught with unlawful possession of a firearm because you were carrying one concealed without a permit, in California, your first infraction was, it's actually a misdemeanor. So it's almost like California throws you a mulligan, where it's like you've got your permit until you actually get caught, you know, if you think about it. I'm not suggesting people do that. I'm not advocating that you don't get a permit to carry, nor am I saying that's the letter of the law. But what I'm saying is, in New Jersey, you're looking at 3 to 5 minimum mandatory on any gun charge, which it's completely draconian and over the top. And then who is this going to affect the most in our society, of people that are unable to or haven't gotten permits? These are going to be the same folks that aren't going to be able to afford proper legal representation. So is that going to be our minority population? Maybe, maybe not. You know, we'd have to look at all the socioeconomics, but the way it usually points is these are neighborhoods and these are communities that are definitely not being taken care of, which I would say by society. You know, I don't think New Jersey's done our black population any favors going back to the 60s. And you know, if people want to challenge me on that, fine. But, you know, there's a long history here going back with our firearms paperwork that in every jurisdiction that had to do with keeping, I'm doing quotes again here, those people from having firearms. And that's no different today. And one of the things that, you know, you kind of struck a chord talking about how, you know, these are the subjective standards that we don't know. And it's not like it's a domestic abuser. It's, you know, it is really bad. And there's one case, and I'm going to report on it eventually. I just haven't yet. I'm just waiting a suitable time for the individual. But there's a fella, he's a Latino guy, and he applied for his permit to carry. And this is a guy that was he's a gun owner, owns guns, has firearms ID card. For all intents and purposes, this is a law-abiding citizen. And when he applied for his permit to carry, they denied him because he had a bad driving record. Now, there was nothing on his driving record that was criminal or overly reckless, but he had a bad driving record. There was nothing there that was, like I said, it was all civil penalties, and they denied him. And then when he applied a second time for his permit to carry, with a little bit of legal help, now it wasn't representation that I would have brought to the table, but that's neither here nor there, he still got denied. And this is after, alleged conversations happened with the chief of police or whatever. And then he also challenged the officer that was trying to issue not issue the paperwork, I guess we should say, and saying, where does it say that I need to have a clean driving record, to get a permit to carry? And the guy, I've got the email, so this is going to be really embarrassing for this police department when I publish this article, because I've got all of it. The guy was telling this guy that he needs to get his driving record expunged before he would issue him a permit to carry. And if you know that the guy has the bad driving record, does it matter if it's expunged or not? You know what I'm saying? If it's not a disqualifier, like, who cares? Still know that he has the bad driving record. So if it's a public health, safety, welfare standard issue without an expungement, what makes it not one with an expungement? Right?
And I'm just thinking, I mean, expungement isn't like going down, the courthouse and paying a, $10 fee to have somebody, wipe out your record. I mean, there's legal, fees that you're going to have to be paying. I would think at least $1,000, if not a couple thousand, to have your records expunged, which then again, as I was saying before, it just racks up the bill for these vulnerable populations, how they can't get, or how they can't exercise their constitutional rights properly. And, they're not precluded by any other law besides somebody going along saying, I don't like, your driving record. I don't like how you look. I don't like, all these things that if they were doing it for any other reason, they'd probably be protesting the streets. But since it's a concealed carry permit, if they went along and said somebody had a bad driving record and you couldn't, you couldn't go to school, something like that, people would be like, how do those two things relate? Or going along and saying, you can't drive here because you've got a bad record. And it's like, wait a minute, I paid my fine. I've got my driver's license. There's no reason to preclude me from driving on any public street I want to. Same thing when it comes to exercising your Second Amendment rights to be able to go along and, be able to protect yourself.
Oh yeah. And this next thing that I'm going to say, it doesn't matter, right? So you and I, and I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but I'm going to take a stab at it, okay? And I'm going to put you in the same cloth that I'm on. And if somebody came to you for training for a concealed carry permit or whatever, I'm going to guess that you don't care why they want a permit to carry on a, I'm not going to train you level, right? Somebody wants to defend themselves. Unless there's something that's like blatantly off, like you want to get your permit to carry, I think that's awesome. Let's help you let's help you make that happen. Right.
Yeah. Unless you give me a reason to go along and say, hey, as soon as I get my permit, I'm going to go along and, get even with this person, which is like, no, that's not what a concealed carry permit's for. That's, really my only exception. I don't care what gender you are. I don't care what race you are. I don't care what religion, you believe in, just as long as you're a good upstanding citizen that want to be able to exercise their Second Amendment rights. That's my criteria.
So this guy, the reason why he wanted his permit to carry, and again, it doesn't matter, it never mattered, and then post-Bruin, it certainly doesn't matter why, But the reason he wanted his permit to carry was for work purposes, because he was working for a company with an armored car, and he was a guard. He was being held back from being able to get a promotion at his job as an armed security guard in this armored car. Now, whether or not he was driving, I don't know. I doubt he'd be driving, because his driving record was pretty bad. But, you know, still, this was an individual that was seeking employment, and that's why he wanted his permit to carry. And, you know, I just think it's crazy that he went through all of this. Now, he did say he was able to eventually get his permit through a state police barracks. And he said he's probably going to be able to get his non-restricted permit, because he got a restricted permit for work only. He should be able to get a non-restricted permit in a couple of months or whatever. So we're not really going to jeopardize that process for this guy. Yeah,
as long as the driving's all right, I'm sure. Right.
Right.
You know, he can't get any jaywalking tickets, because that would definitely prove that he's a public safety hazard, you know, jaywalking.
When the details of this story do finally break out, though, it's going to be like egg on their face big time. So some of the other things that I uncovered here. So we've got that subjective standard. Then we've got the black denial rate, and then part of that black denial rate is also subjective, right? It's doubled that of whites. Excessive wait times was another thing that I uncovered on this dashboard, where you had, and this one I had to put in an OPRA to get the data. So they sent me the data. The Attorney General's office did make good on it. They sent me the information so I could, and it's out there. I share it. You can look at the data yourself. And if you hunt down these articles, you know, I've got it on a Google Drive, so you can go and look at this stuff. I share it all with everyone, right? So there's no smoke and mirrors here. A pre-Bruin wait time. So now this dashboard only goes back to like 2019. And granted, it's whatever data they had available, right? Then when the Attorney General said he wants people to collect this data, then they had to, right? But a pre-Bruin permit, there was a guy that waited over 1,000 days to get issued his permit. So not only was it like he applied in 2019, it wasn't until something like 6 or 9 months after the Bruin decision that they actually issued his permit. So
that wasn't really that long, was it?
Yeah, right.
Over 1,000 days. Jeez, yep, old Pete's.
Yep. And
the pandemic was about 1,000 days.
You exactly.
Know, that's unbelievable. I know Ohio, we get worked up when it gets anywhere close to 45 days. For it and to go 1,000 days, it's just that's insanity.
It takes
bureaucracy that long to go along and allow you to exercise your constitutional rights.
Do the right thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the post-Bruin permit, the winningest wait was around 500 days. So this is after the Bruin decision, and even says, you know, excessive waits are unconstitutional. 500 days for this guy. And there's a statute in New Jersey where, and it's a weasel word. And the reason I say that is because it says that there's a 120-day limit to issue the permit, but that's 120 days after the issuing authority declares the application complete. So if it's just sitting on the desk and the, you know, it's in the computers, it's in the ether, but, you know, we'll just say here it's sitting on his desk. He can claim it's not complete or whatever for as long as he wants, because if you don't look at it, you can't declare it complete, right? So it kind of gets them off the hook indefinitely, you know, but let's say 120 days is something we're going to stick to, right? About 10% of the permit applications were 120 days or over for issuance or denial. And then about 10% of the permit decisions were 0 to 9 days. And then I'd say the average wait time was somewhere around 50 something days, like 54 days, I think, was the average, which even 50 days, in my opinion, is way excessive. The reason why I picked the 0 to 9 days for that range when I was looking at the ranges to kind of compartmentalize these time frames was because I felt that a 9-day wait to get your permit to carry is about as much as I think anyone should have to endure. Now, I think it should be instant. It's an instant system. There's no reason.
It's all computers. Nobody's got to go downstairs to go through the records to go along and find something. It's all been computerized.
Yep. So, but if we're going to just play politics here, if you told me that 9 days is the most anyone's going to have to wait, I mean, I think that would keep us satiated for a couple of decades.
Yeah.
You know, before challenging something like that. But it's the 50 days, the 120 days. You know, when I applied, I think it was in September, and I didn't get issued until January. And the real kicker to all of this, and this is something that I haven't really publicly spoke about, but one of the judges, the judge that was supposed to be issuing my permit to carry when it was in their possession, because the permit judges changed a few times in my county where I live. They cycled them out a couple times. Judges aren't involved anymore. So this was like the old system, and in the Bruin response, you know, bill that got passed, judges aren't involved anymore. So it's great. And it's computerized. So it's even better. Right. But the judge that was supposed to be issuing me my permit actually emailed me asking me about doing permit to carry training for them and their spouse, because they got my name off of one of the websites, and it's in the same county that they're in. And, you know, it never went anywhere. And I don't think it went anywhere because the judge found out the legislative intent was that judges weren't going to even, I think, need to get permits. I don't think they had to do training. I don't think they need permits to carry. I think they wrote themselves out of the law completely. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's the gall that we're dealing with in New Jersey, is this, the judge that, and then that judge ended up not even issuing me my permit. The judges changed. So it was from September until, like I said, January, right around SHOT Show. And it was right before SHOT Show, or during SHOT Show, it might have been during SHOT Show, that I realized, because they gave me the permit, I think I got it right before SHOT and then I left, right? I realized that they issued me the permit with my wrong birth date on it, so I needed them to reissue me the permit again. which actually went smoother than you would have thought it would have. Like, the people in my town were great, and the judge and the prosecutor just, you know, fast lined it and took care of it like they were supposed to, but they still screwed it up. They put the wrong birth date. I'm going to say they did it on purpose. I mean, everything was typed. Like, why the heck would they give me the wrong date? You know,
did they transpose it or something simple like that? Or did they make, you know, it December your birthday when it was really like May, so the numbers weren't even the
same. It was off by a couple of days, so who knows, right?
Okay. Yeah,
these are the issues that I uncovered. Now, every single time that I've raised an issue and I've uncovered something new, whether it's the subjective standards, whether it's the wait times, and then the big thing here is this racial disparity, and I'm not going to stop banging this drum for a very long time until somebody listens to me about this. Every single time I've reached out to the Attorney General, Matthew Platkin's office, to ask them for comment, and every time they write back basically saying, we declined to comment, or the office declines to comment, right? And when I say that I write the attorney general, I'm writing his press office, right? That's who you would write when you're looking for a comment for something, you know, as a journalist. But I'm also sending it to the attorney general's actual email address. So the attorney general and his press people are both getting all of these emails, and none of them are getting bounced back undeliverable. So I know he's getting them. And I know what his email address is from former Open Public Record Act requests that I had done, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they don't want to take ownership of any of this, and they know it's happening underneath their leadership. And then one of the other things that I don't think you and I talked about, that's kind of like the next step after all of this. So I waited what I would consider a suitable time, let's say like a month, right? And from the time that I basically, we'll say, notified the attorney general by asking them for comment, right? Because you're letting them know there's a problem there while you're asking.
Right.
I put out more open public records requests, right? And I sought in two different requests, two different times, guidance on whether or not the attorney general has sent out guidance on excessive wait times and delays and the 120-day time limit. And that was one request. And the other request was if the attorney general has sent out any guidance on dealing with racial disparity, right? And these 2.5 time permit denials difference between blacks and whites. So I send out these open public records requests, and they both came back denied, but they weren't really denied because, like, if you get a denial, they're usually pretty angry and they, you know, send you a whole bunch of legal mumbo jumbo telling you you're not entitled to the information.
Mm-hmm.
They were denied because, as they said, you know, the records custodian said no such records, you know, exist. So not only would the attorney general fail to comment on these things happening underneath his leadership, he also failed to send out any guidance to the issuing authorities to rectify these problems. So he's like incredibly complicit in this scheme. So when I went and addressed the attorney general's office again to say, hey, I put out these open public record requests, you know, seeing if you sent out any guidance, I noticed you did not send out any guidance. Do you have any comment on that? And do you have any intention to send out any guidance? Like, is it in your prerogative to eventually, you know, tell issuing authorities how to handle these issues? And of course, in both instances, they wrote back with the office's clients to comment. So that's what we're dealing with in New Jersey right now. The entire New Jersey legislative body has been notified of the racial bias issue. I did email them all. I got single-digit responses, and of those single-digit responses, only one actual legislator themselves responded to me, not a staffer or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that legislator seemed interested in talking about it, and then it never got off the ground, right? I probably should re-follow up with them, but there's so much going on. But the entire legislative body has been notified and was asked for comment on this. No comment, nothing. Again, the attorney general is like now at this point completely complicit with it. The governor's office has failed to respond to three requests for comment. So Governor Phil Murphy's office will not respond with a comment to the racial bias issue at all. And then I also have a response from the New Jersey ACLU that I'll be writing about in the future, as well as Senator Cory Booker. For those of you who don't know who Senator Cory Booker is, he's one of our, you know, federal, you know, senators in New Jersey. He's the guy that was yelling about being Spartacus a number of years ago. I don't know if you guys remember that, Cory Booker. I did get a response from him that I'll be reporting on to in the future as well. But let me tell you something. It's nothing earth shattering, because if it was, I would have covered it already. And pretty much unilaterally across the board, the NAACP, the ACLU, Dr. Cornel West, Al Sharpton and his group, Black Lives Matter, nobody cares. Nobody's responded to me.
That's kind of amazing, because you're not talking something that's arbitrary. These are constitutional rights, and you would think that those groups would stand up for the civil rights of the individuals, because when your rights are denied, that's a major infraction, on the government side of things, and not what was originally envisioned by our founders for it.
Yeah, so that's what we have going on in New Jersey right now, and we'll see how it all flushes out.
Let me ask you this, John.
Yeah, go ahead.
My blood's, getting heated up here a little bit. I'm sure there's some instructors in New Jersey there that are, wondering what can they do, as well. There's probably instructors are other places. What can we do from the instructor side of things, to help our students so that they can get a concealed carry permit in a reasonable amount of time, and B, what can we do to help sway the, political winds to be more, fair to everybody?
Well, I mean, we have to show up and vote. That's the first thing that we have to do. We also have to, engage our air quotes public servants. And I say air quotes because most of the time they're serving themselves. They're not serving us, the people, at least in New Jersey. There are states out there that their public servants actually do serve the people. It's just that New Jersey is a corrupt wasteland that's like basically mafia ridden. And if you don't believe me about that, just look at the latest thing that the Attorney General launched against a former, Democratic power broker here in the state. So with RICO and racketeering charges. So, there is like a lot of influence here that's very bad and negative. So we have an uphill battle. So voting is probably the most important thing that we can do, but we also do need to let our public servants know what we're thinking, and we need to engage them, and we need to continually write them, send snail mail letters and emails and phone calls, all of it, just to let your position be known. And there's a lot of people out there say, well, it's not going to make a difference. It's not going to make a difference. Maybe it will, maybe it won't, but it's like the minimum that we can do to stay engaged. Not everyone has to do what you and I do, Rob, for our advocacy and our activism. Like, you put a lot of time, effort, and money into your craft to expand knowledge on firearms training and rights and the rest. And obviously I spend a lot of time doing this. People who are just instructors or students, even just gun owners, you don't have to get involved to this level. It's the simple things, like I said, staying engaged even minimally. And then if you're not going to even do that, you should still, but send money to the organizations that are supporting you. Like, you have the Buckeye Firearms, and you also have the Ohio Rifle Association, right? Is that's what it's called?
Ohio Rifle and Pistol.
Yeah, Ohio Rifle Pistol, Buckeye Firearms, both groups that are doing great work up by you, by me in New Jersey. We've got the Association of New Jersey Firearms Owners. We've got NJ2AS. We got Coalition New Jersey Firearms Owners, Rifle Pistol Club here. That's what I'm about to say. ANJRPC. I'm like running alphabet soup here. Is the Association of New Jersey Rifle Pistol Clubs. My gosh. How could I forget? And these are the groups that are doing a lot of the work here in the litigation front. And then you also have the national arena and groups like the Second Amendment Foundation, Gun Owners of America, Gun Owners Foundation, Firearms Policy Coalition, et cetera, et cetera, up to and including the NRA. And I know a lot of people, you know, they don't want to talk about the NRA. Like, we don't talk about Bruno. We don't talk about the NRA. We need to remember that the NRA, the Bruin case was always an NRA case from day one. So NRA was supporting the, you know, New York State Rifle Pistol Association in that. So this victory that we have in Bruin was made very much so in part by the NRA. So, but even if you don't want to support them, fine. There's other groups out there to support that are doing the work for us. And I guess that's the best advice that I could give, you know, on this, Rob.
And would it be helpful if people went along and you wrote about this on Bearing Arms, and that's where I saw it at and got the idea for the podcast, to go along and basically send a quick letter to their legislature saying, hey, what are you going to be doing about this discrepancy? Because I think enough people ask, they will get the, they will understand that people are, they want this kind of stuff, you know, to stop and for the permitting process to be fair across the board, no matter what economic status you're in.
Oh, yeah. Specifically, if you're listening from New Jersey and you want to engage on this actual topic, find my articles on Bearing Arms. The one article is called Black Applicants for New Jersey Permits to Carry Denied More Than Double Whites. There's another one there that says, is New Jersey AG Platkin willfully allowing civil rights violations and racial bias in carry permit scheme? And if you can't find them, I have a link tree and a webpage. If you go to my webpage, thepenpatriot.com, there's a link to my link tree there where it's got all the links to my work. You'll find it there. And if you want to send these articles to your lawmakers or all of the lawmakers, I do think that will make a difference, because eventually they're going to have to answer to that. And I'll extend that to also to the Attorney General's office and to the governor's office. They all need to be held accountable for this, especially because that 2C law that I keep reading off, that's the interest in public health, safety, and welfare standard that I'm talking about, they actually changed it during the Bruin response bill. And they added that last part about lacking the essential character of temperament necessary to be entrusted with a firearm. They added that to the law. So all of the people that voted for this are now actually need to understand that they voted for a law that's being disproportionately used against blacks. Originally, the public health, safety, welfare ended right there. It says, to any person where the issuance would not be in the interest of public health, safety, or welfare, right? They added all that other mumbo jumbo about the character of temperament to just make the statute extra deadly. So that would be my recommendation. And if you had similar issues in your jurisdiction that's not New Jersey, yes, a concerted effort sending all of that information in, I think, would at least catch their attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, this time of year, going to the elections and different things like that, the politicians are extremely responsive when it comes to constituent questions. And I think you really got to ask them, you know, this is not fair, what you've uncovered, and what are they going to do about it? And if they decide to give you the standard, you know, answer of, you know, we'll look into it, you know, we, you know, and, you know, we got to check the data first, you know, stay on them and see what's going on. Because if you've got a political candidate that is not going to, you know, fight for his constituents, you know, that's probably not the right politician for you to vote for come November.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But yeah, that's the update in the Garden State, Rob.
Yeah, that just Like I said, you know, season 4, episode 13, when we talked about permitless carry here in Ohio, and you know, the people that were disproportionately affected by the concealed carry laws that we had at the time, and they kind of helped push that over the finish line for the permitless carry here in Ohio. It's one of those things people really need to look at, you know, who's it serving, who's it not, because I encourage everybody, go out, get as much training as they can afford. But I also realize that a lot of cases, if you are a lower income, you may not have enough for a gun this month and training and apply for your carry permit. So you need to stretch that out for it. And those are all things to where, you know, you should be able to exercise your rights without having to, you know, wait 1,000 days on the government to issue a concealed carry permit. So thank you, John, for your time, because that's that really gets me going. Here in Ohio, just to give you a contrast, I was on a phone call with my mom, pulled in the sheriff's office, told her I'd call her back when I came out of the sheriff's office, called her back 3 minutes later after I'd been fingerprinted, paid my money, and gave them the application. Okay, 3 minutes later. And that was on Tuesday. By Friday, I had my concealed carry permit in my hand. They had mailed it to me.
Yeah, it's incredible. It really is.
It's a electronic system. I mean, it's essentially the same system that if you get pulled over for speeding, you know, or something that the police officer is going to look into. It's not one of those things that takes a whole lot of time. It's boom, it's there.
No, it doesn't. Easy answer. When I put in for my Pennsylvania permit to carry, I submitted the application around midnight. And then when I woke up the next morning, I saw that I had gotten my approval at 8 a.m. So it could be that quick, like overnight, like, you know. So these jurisdictions are playing games.
Yeah, and unfortunately, they're playing games with your safety and with your constitutional rights, which should not happen. So,
no. Well, I want to say I very much so appreciate you sharing your audience with me to get this information out, because I know this isn't specifically a training related topic. Yes, training comes in and out of here because you actually, you know, you need to get trained to get your permit to carry. And I know, I think, like I said, Tony talked a lot about that on his episode with you. Mm-hmm. So I know this is maybe a little bit off the beaten path. It's a little bit more political from what you're accustomed to. So I definitely appreciate you bringing me on to talk about this, because I think it's an important issue, and clearly, you know, you do too.
Well, I think one of the things that's interesting, and maybe this will spark a few of the instructors out there to ask for the same information or look up the same information in their states, because it's one of those things to where you get enough people asking questions about it, politicians and elected officials will start looking at it, because it doesn't look good, you know, for, you know, whether it's New Jersey or any other state to have this kind of discrepancy between, you know, who they issue permits to and who they don't. And then the frivolous grounds that they, you know, deny them on. I mean, it's one thing if you can't pass a 4473 to deny you, but it's a whole nother one to go along and say you got speeding tickets or you got a jaywalking ticket, and that's enough for us to, you know, decline your application. That's just not right.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, John, I appreciate your time, but before we let you go, we've been asking all our season 7 guests, what do you do for your mental health every day?
It's a great question, Rob. And I remember being asked this on the Walk the Talk America podcast a number of years ago. And I kind of laughed and I said, well, I used to write as an outlet to help me, you know, to tend to my mental health and to, you know, have a little bit of catharsis. And then that writing, it evolved and it's turned into something completely different. But I would say, yes, I still do write to help tend to my mental health, but it's done a bit more for me than just that. I like to unplug and just do family time stuff and then be able to, you know, do full on escapism, hit the water parks and things like that and theme parks and just, you know, escape into, you know, the crowds, so to say, you know, I like that kind of thing for sure. But yeah, lots of family time. And a big thing is just putting the phone down, making sure you put it down, you know, long enough to where you know you're getting a break from the constant pings and whatnot. So that's another thing that's a little bit harder to subscribe to, but it's something I try to do.
Yep. Well, it takes your mental health is an important thing to stay focused on. A little bit of attention to it can go a long way.
Absolutely.
Great. Well, John, where can people find out about you, what you're doing with the Penn Patriot, and what you're doing at Bearing Arms?
Okay. So my work over at Bearing Arms, you can find links to all of that work, obviously, at Bearing Arms. But if you go to my website, thepennpatriot.com, there's an area there where it'll take you to my link tree, and then it'll also have links to specific bylines like the Bearing Arms one or Ammo Land or whatever. And you could check out all my articles there. I'm also on Facebook, The Penn Patriot on Facebook. Over at Instagram, I'm J Petrolino, III. Over at Twitter, I'm John Petrolino. And then, of course, something that you and I briefly spoke about is I just launched a new website called The Square Reviews, and it's a product and travel review site. And it's pretty cool because it gives me an opportunity to flex a little bit on some of these other things that we're talking about, like me saying, hey, just unplug with the family and go to a water park or a theme park. Well, if you want to learn about all that, you can head over to thesquarereviews.com, and I've got a bunch of water park reviews. I got some theme park reviews. But alongside that, I also have some everyday carry flashlights, some holsters, and other, you know, gadgets and things that might be of interest to you. I don't know when you're rolling the episode out, but by the time this comes out, I think there'd be a pair of socks, alpaca wool socks, that you could read about. So that's all over there. And again, it gave me an opportunity to take all of these experiences that I'm having and put them there. And that includes both the firearm related stuff and, you know, everything else.
Very nice. Very nice. Well, John, appreciate you coming on the podcast again and sharing your information, even though it got me a little bit hot under the collar. It's good to be educated about these, and also, you know, as instructors, we've got to be able to, you know, pass good information on to our students, and you definitely are a wealth of good information, John.
Well, thank you, Rob. I definitely appreciate it. And again, thank you. Thank you very much for sharing your audience for me. And one more quick plug. Anybody that has a news story or a tip or anything like that, you want to get in touch with me, you can email me very easily, john@thepennpatriot.com.
Okay. Well, those will all be in the show notes for people. And again, John, thanks for your time.
Take it easy, Rob.
Bye. That's a wrap for this episode, and hope you taking some notes or going to plan on taking some action after listening to that podcast of what John's uncovered through his Freedom of Information Act on New Jersey permit systems and how they discriminate against people for some of the littlest things in the world, anything to deny somebody the right to be able to defend themselves. And remember, share this with your friends, maybe even your family. Get people knowing. And again, as firearm owners, we're not a noisy crowd normally, but some of these things we really do have to stand up and say it's not right. Government should be fair to everybody, not to just their people that they view worthy for it. And remember, if you're searching for information to help your business out, don't forget to check out our website at www.farmtrainerpodcast.com and use the search bar in the upper right-hand corner. If you have questions for me, just email me at ftp@concealedcarry.com. And remember, visit our sponsors of the podcast, and especially the Firearm Trainers Association at ftaprotect.com. Remember, you're building a business and you want to be safe, get plenty of training, but also don't overlook the need to have insurance to protect you and your students. And as a listener, you can get 10% off your policy by entering promo code FTP10 at checkout. We bring this podcast support the industry, the Second Amendment, and most importantly, every firearm instructor in America dedicates time and energy into making gun owners more knowledgeable. Stay safe out there, everyone.
Concealed Carry Inc. and ConcealedCarry.com strives to share helpful information and education about gun-related topics, training tips, and other things that may potentially have legal implications for its listeners. The information contained in this podcast is intended in good faith, but it is important to understand that laws vary from place to place, and we encourage listeners to seek local legal advice to understand laws that apply to them. Nothing in this podcast should be misconstrued as legal advice or counsel.
The Honorable Cause of Free South is a collection of 12 essays written by Southern nationalist authors. The book explores topics such as what is the Southern nation, what is Southern nationalism, and how can we achieve a free and independent Dixie. The Honorable Cause answers questions on our own terms. The book invites readers to understand for themselves why a free and independent Dixie is both preferable and possible. The book pulls in some of the biggest producers of pro-South content, including James Edwards, the host and creator of The Political Cesspool, and Wilson Smith, author of Charlottesville Untold, Arkansas congressional candidate and activist Neil Kumar, host and creator of the Dissident Mama podcast, Rebecca Dillingham, author of A Walk in the Park, My Charlottesville Story, Identity Dixie's Patrick Martin, and yours truly, Michael Hill, founder and president of the League of the South, as well as several other authors. The Honorable Cause is available now at Amazon.com.
It's easy to see. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. We all know something big is coming, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming more self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. My Patriot Supply is the nation's largest emergency preparedness company, and they make it easy for you to prepare. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure some emergency food kits. There's a dozen to choose from that contain tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one food kit for each family member. My Patriot Supply also sells large solar generators, gravity-powered water filtration systems, heirloom seeds for your garden, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m. and your items will ship that same day. Time is short. Prepare today. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
You're listening to Resolution Radio. Radio. Radio.
ResolutionRDO.com.
KD Armor raised the standard. Finally, AR-500 steel core body armor that comfortably conforms to the chest and torso. Unique design distributes weight, feeling lighter, increases mobility, and lessens fatigue. Introducing the Combat Quad Bend CQB, a revolutionary plate forming process that caters to the end user. The CQB is an industry game changer, a must-have for the ladies. Available now, only at katiearmor.com, C-A-T-I-armor.com. Come and take it.
There are many water filters to choose from, but there is only one system that is consistently customer rated 5 stars as the number one system for effective filtration of fluoride, radiation, drug residues, heavy metals, a wide range of radioisotopes, and more. Introducing the PureFect Ultra, the next generation water filter that also raises alkaline pH, improves antioxidant potential, and has advanced anti-radiation technology. All while using no electricity. Sold worldwide, it provides virtually instant clean water on demand. It is not made in China, and the shipping is free to all 50 states. Buy your PureFect Ultra today by visiting PureFectFilters.com or call 888-891-4821. Again, that's 888-891-4821 or visit PureFectFilters.com.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
I love the America!
However you slice it, America is intentionally under attack by many incarnations of foreign infiltration.
It's not Genocide Joe that has to go. It's the entire system that has to go.
Whether it's the blunt, dull force of the open jihad growing within the interior of the United States.
Quote, almost immediately after the October 7th attack, people were celebrating in the streets in Dearborn.
Why can't you just say whether or not you condemn people chanting death to Mer- Why are you afraid to talk to Fox?
Fox News, listen, using racist tropes towards my community is what Fox News is about, and I don't talk to Fox News.
Is death to America racist?
Or the hordes of bloodthirsty Haitians storming the beaches of Florida.
Florida's governor deploying more patrols to the state's southern coast and plans to install new leadership in Haiti appears to be crumbling.
And even the U.S. Marines are being sent into Haiti to help secure the U.S. embassy there. But in the worst areas where that chaos is happening, we know that there are a number of U.S. citizens that are literally stranded.
Or the now rampant looting of the United States infrastructure. That has no end in sight.
Six additional buses arrived at the Port Authority bus terminal overnight.
This comes after 14 buses arrived from Texas.
Tonight, another major U.S. city, San Diego, buckling as it grapples with a growing number of migrants. Border Patrol dropping off hundreds of people at local bus stops from as far away as China.
No country comes remotely close to executing the art of war as China does with its methodical, creeping disintegration warfare being waged on the United States of America. Author Peter Schweitzer writes that disintegration warfare, in the Chinese leader's words, is going after the United States' soft underbelly in terms of politics, economics, and the spirit and psychology of its people. Disintegration warfare is based on the ancient Chinese strategist and general Sun Tzu's teachings on how to win a war without fighting. The strategy is aimed at undermining a rival country's, quote, national will, values, and cohesion, end quote. A Chinese immigrant who is now a U.S. congressional candidate has warned Americans not to underestimate China's use of soft power to infiltrate the United States and achieve global dominance.
I know what no freedom of speech is what I'm all about. I know what big government is all about.
China is investigating and logging every weakness in American national security it can find.
China is buying up some American farmland. The question is China doing that to spy on the U.S. military?
What we're seeing now is a continuing trend and an uptick in these intrusions.
According to the Wall Street Journal, the FBI, Department of Defense, and others have been conducting a year-long investigation into so-called gate crashers. It's happening all over the U.S., according to the report. In Florida, Chinese scuba divers were caught swimming in dirty water near a government rocket launch site. In New Mexico, the gatecrashers attempted to breach a missile launch location. Officials even caught Chinese nationals leaving a tour of the White House, attempting to take photos of Secret Service and communications equipment.
Meanwhile, the Chinese are pouring fuel on the fire of gang violence that is tearing cities apart. As Breitbart reports, cities such as St. Louis continue to devolve into war zones. This, in large part, to the fact that the communist Chinese government has been flooding the United States with illicit gun parts.
A penny-sized device can turn a semi-automatic weapon into one that can fire up to 1,100 bullets a minute with one pull of the trigger. ATF agent Tony Pierce demonstrated the machine gun conversion device, commonly known as a Glock switch, at a gun range in Slidell.
With the regular Glock setup in semi-automatic, it's much easier to control the shots because you have time to allow the weapon to cycle, and you're able to control your recoil.
The weapon is harder to handle when it's fully automatic using the illegal switch.
A lot of times on the street, guys are shooting with one hand, and to try to control this with just one hand would be nearly impossible. And you're going to have innocent bystanders in the background and the foreground who could also get hit by this.
Records reveal that between 2019 and 2021, there was a rise of 4,200% in incidents involving machine gun fire in 130 American cities. The Chinese flooding of third world America with Glocks, which is ensuring that the mass murder of innocent civilians will eventually lead to sweeping gun control legislation. Solution? Close the border today. John Barrow for InfoWars.
Please stand by for further details. We return you now to your regularly scheduled program.
I know, as viewers and listeners, you've heard callers call in and talk about how X3 has changed their life. You've heard listeners talk about how incredible 10-hour clean energy Turbo Force is. Well, both products are back in stock right now. In fact, X3 has been sold out for more than 6 months, but despite that, it is 40% off because I want the people who have never tried the product to try it. Our regular listeners and the folks that have already tried it are chomping at the bit to get it. We appreciate them. But less than 1% of you ever buy a product at InfoWarsStore.com. Go there. Try X3. Get the missing link that's essential to all electrochemical activity in your body. This is the purest, highest quality triiodine out there. You owe it to yourself to get a bottle and experience it for yourself. Takes a few weeks to kick in. On average, get X.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
You're listening to Resolution Radio, Radio, Radio. ResolutionRDO.com.
In a recent interview with Clayton Morris on Redacted, U.S. Border Patrol agent turned filmmaker J.J. Carroll discussed his new documentary and the fact that prison facilities are being built in all 50 states to hold millions of political dissidents.
And there's detention facility bids to build individual detention facilities in every state in the union. And then she goes on to say to me, well, J.J., who do you think they're built for? And she says in this interview, they're for dissidents, American dissidents.
The FEMA camps were reported decades ago. This was never an outrageous conspiracy theory. The U.S. government has been framing American patriots as the enemy for decades. And the reason should be obvious. Those who have been in control of the U.S. government for generations have no interest in serving the people in accordance to the Constitution or otherwise. Our country is being destroyed from within, and the rule of law has been weaponized against those who defend it. Hundreds of innocent Americans have been arrested and thrown in jail because they chose to peacefully protest the 2020 stolen election. And others, such as Jeremy Brown, a Green Beret who was approached in late 2020 by federal agents trying to recruit him for the Jan 6 false flag operation, was arrested after going public with this information by the same federal agents. He was put in maximum security prison, where he remains to this day, his 1,000th day in federal prison. Hundreds of innocent Americans have been in jail for years, and several have been tortured. Much of America is okay with the fact that hundreds are rotting in jail for a peaceful protest. It's already become the norm. While it's definitely worth celebrating the release of Julian Assange, The American people have never been more divided. The Daily Mail reports that more than 40% of Americans think a new civil war will be fought within the next decade. According to one poll, more than 4 in 10 U.S. voters say the country is likely to get ripped apart in a second civil war within 5 years. And another shows that over 100 million Americans say that civil war is coming. Based on the recommendation of think tank Policy Horizons, Canada has been preparing for an American civil war, including cyber attacks and grid failures following the 2024 presidential election. The soldiers of the New World Order are not going to die easy. They are apparently willing to spark a nuclear conflict with Russia and are already writing new laws to bring back the draft.
So women have never been required to register for the draft, but that could soon change thanks to lawmakers on Capitol Hill.
Martha, good morning. The Senate version of the National Defense Authorization Act, which sets out military and national security priorities, would require women to register for selective service. It concludes, quote, "This is a necessary and fair step, making it possible to draw on the talent of a unified nation in a time of national emergency." Now, there are two different versions of this bill, one in the House, one in the Senate, so it's possible women in the draft could get dropped as lawmakers iron out the differences.
So while women may get dropped from this bill, our government is bringing back the draft while provoking a major war with Russia. They have their bunkers, and they've already jailed hundreds for protesting an election, so they'll definitely jail draft dodgers and everyone else who stands in their way, unless we unite against them. Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese. Thank you for watching the latest Greg Reese Report. Be sure to go to reesereport.com to see my latest videos, sign up for my free newsletter, and subscribe for exclusive content. And be sure to support my sponsor at InfoWarsStore.com.
While other networks lie to you about what's happening now, InfoWars tells you the truth about what's happening next.
Omega-3 fatty acids are needed for optimal strength, and they can only be obtained through diet. They can be found in grass-fed beef, which is why the ruling class is trying to ban it. And they can be found in fish, which are arguably the best source of omega-3s. But the problem today is finding fish without a high mercury content. Your best option is our Ultimate Fish Oil and Ultimate Krill Oil at InfoWarsStore.com. Omega-3 fatty acids are essential for both our neurological and cardiovascular systems, our brain and our heart. They improve mood, mental clarity, and immune function. Get your essential omega-3 fatty acids from the best sources available: Ultimate Fish Oil and Ultimate Krill Oil. Get some today at InfoWarsStore.com.
And now I got a bunch of people asking me, oh, what are we going to do? What should we do? Educate yourself. Spread the word. The United Nations has just declared war on the truth. They're telling you outright, if you speak up, you're a conspiracy theorist. Shouldn't be believed. Should be approached in a certain fashion. The authorities should be contacted and all kinds of neat shit. They want war? Arm yourself with facts. Get out there and start telling the people. You don't want to do it on social media? Do it in person. Do it on the telephone. Do it like we used to do, standing around on the street corner having a coffee. Do you know who your enemy is? The World Economic Forum. 51 years they've been working at this. They've been planning and scheming, working as hard as they can. And now, here we are. Klaus Schwab has admitted that for over 45 years, they've been working directly with the CCP. Now here we are in Canada and the U.S. We got 5G, military-grade 5G technology right across the country. Where did it come from? Who owns that technology? And what's going to happen when they don't like it? Get to know your enemy. Get to know the facts. Speak the fuck up. Be a warrior. That's what we need to do, instead of following Marcus like a bunch of fucking sheep.